You said, the result of sincere service to one's spiritual master, the disciple automatically gains divine knowledge, whether the guru verbally advises him in it or not. I cannot understand very well how that is possible. Understand the question? Even if your guru doesn't verbally give you knowledge, the disciple can receive knowledge. A human being sees everything externally, but the Lord sees everything internally. When the disciple has sincere devotion, then the Lord, who has an inner vision, will automatically appear from within him in the form of the Guru Shakti, whether something was verbally said or not. So if one is very sincere, has sincere devotion for his Guru, Krishna, from within him, he will actually manifest the power or potency within that disciple, even if the disciple hasn't heard verbally. When sincere devotion and faith are there, all the answers to his questions will be given to the devotee from within. We've had that experience that Srila Prabhupada, we kept thinking because when you approach a spiritual master, you're supposed to inquire from him submissively, render service, be humble, and be respectful and humble. Tadviti pranipate, you know, you fall like a rut, you're very humble, submissive. Then you're supposed to make inquiries and then serve him. And by serving him, you please him. And by pleasing him, you get special mercy or Guru Shakti, by which you can understand the transcendental knowledge and make progress in spiritual life. And so we felt we must have to ask some questions, otherwise how will we progress? But every time we kept thinking, we have to ask a question. But then whenever we hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures or read his books, then all our questions would be answered. So we never asked Prabhupada any questions. So it's actually saying here that if one is sincere, with sincere devotion and faith, all the answers to his questions will automatically be given to a devotee from within. So what verse is there in the Bhagavad Gita that supports this point? Tesham sarata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogantam yena mamhi. So Krishna says, dadami buddhi yogantam. He says, Krishna's in the heart of every living entity. And if one is priti bhajan, tesham sadata yuktanam bhajatam priti pur. If one does bhajan with priti, which means love and devotion, priti. If one serves the guru with love and devotion, then Krishna from within gives him intelligence. And one tape, Srila Prabhupada said, we've repeated this point before, Srila Prabhupada said, for a sincere disciple, if one is very sincere, since what does that mean? Sincere means that he very enthusiastically and patiently and dutifully carries out and executes all the orders of the spiritual master, big and small. It goes without saying, he follows the four regulative principles, very pure in his behavior. But he tries to follow all the orders of the spiritual master, not just to follow them, but very enthusiastically. And that's the definition of sincere. So if one is actually sincerely serving, Prabhupada said, if one is sincerely serving a spiritual master, he'll never make any mistakes. I mean, any serious mistakes. He may burn sweet rice or something one time, but he'll never have any serious problems in Krishna consciousness. So go on one by one, you know, successfully. Many deep philosophical truths will automatically appear within the mind of such a disciple. Sri Gurudev is the manifestation of the Lord Himself. Other than through the Guru, there is no way to enter the spiritual kingdom. The Godhead principle can never be perceived through the gross human senses. Bhagavan's Acharya Shakti uses Sri Gurudev to reveal otherwise difficult truths about Him in an easily accessible way. When a disciple who is completely obedient and who is very eager to know the truth about God comes to Sri Gurudev's lotus feet and prays to the Lord, O Bhagavan, if you are my only shelter, then please reveal to me the truth about you. Then certainly this divine potency will work through Sri Guru and automatically manifest itself, causing the submissive disciple to experience and realize a very delicate and enchanting transcendental bliss. Then all doubts will automatically be removed. When a completely surrendered, obedient, and inquisitive disciple, who who has firm faith that his guru is telling him the truth, meets with a very merciful, pleasantly disposed, and pleasant to behold, bona fide guru, he will gain redemption from all the suffering of the material world and spend his life in great happiness. The violent gale of material life cannot do him any more harm. How can the obedient disciple experience the result of associating with guru? When the disciple simply meets the most merciful, pleasantly disposed, and pleasant to behold Sri Guru, describes a guru like that, he will attain the highest benefit and his heart will be filled with so much honey-sweet ecstasy. The result of this association will come instantly, for the disciple can clearly experience within his heart, quote, how much insignificant ignorance, namely pride, arrogance, aristocracy, bad habits, and petty disturbance I was carrying along with me. But by the grace of my guru, I am now traversing the path of this greatly elevated knowledge. How much elevated knowledge and how many sweet transcendental feelings are now always acting within my mind. All my small and insignificant problems that I was carrying around with me can no longer disturb me anymore. That's how the disciple thinks, or can, should think, I guess, should experience that within his heart as a result of associating with Sri Guru. In this condition, many difficult problems of the disciple are solved, and many doubts are removed. Arguments and predilections on any subject are diminishing, and the heart becomes steady and peaceful. If by chance one or two bad things are done, then it will all be immediately nullified by the knowledge obtained from the guru. In other words, the disciple does some bad things, does something bad or gets in trouble or something, has some difficulty, then that problem will be removed or nullified by receiving illumination and knowledge from the guru. These old bad habits are sometimes playing within the mind, but they will not get a chance to disturb the consciousness. It's like Prabhupada said, you may have a desire. A desire may come up in our mind, sinful desire or bad desire. But the devotee, by the strength of his Krishna consciousness, he doesn't act on that desire. He just rejects it. He says, that's not me, I don't want that thing. So it doesn't affect his consciousness, which means it doesn't really affect his activities. Consciousness is the platform of activity. So thoughts may come in the mind, but that doesn't mean we act on them. You know, we don't act on those thoughts. So our consciousness remains the same. Consciousness means your activity, your identity, your consciousness, your activity, your energy of action. So my energy of action or my identity is I'm Krishna's servant. And I'm serving my guru and serving Krishna day after day. And during that course of that service, maybe some sinful thoughts or bad thoughts come up in my mind due to my contamination in the material world. But it comes and goes like a cloud comes in the sky, then it goes out of the sky. Sometimes a cloud, the sky is clear, and then it becomes a cloud. We don't give it much, we don't pay attention to it. We go on with our service. So these old bad habits, they may play within the mind, but they don't disturb the consciousness. And you don't surrender to those bad habits. They may come up. You may, for example, you used to smoke cigarettes, and then you came to Gurudev and he said, this is a bad thing, you should give this up. It's not good. So you give it up. But there's still maybe some desires by your strength of association, strength of your determination received from Guru. You give up the bad habit. But then you may go somewhere, go to visit some friends or whatever, and everyone's smoking. They say, here, have a cigarette. And then you have some desire. And you think, oh. And you say, wait a minute, I'm a devotee. I don't do that. I gave that up. So it doesn't affect you. The desire even make, you know, he says, you want a cigarette. You may think, yes. Or another experience of that is in dreams. This is when one can get confirmation of the depth of his Krishna consciousness, which we talked about before, is how deep is your actual identity? Because ego is a platform of identity. Ego means, who am I? I am body, I am man, I am woman, I am Dutch, I am German, I am Indian. Spiritual ego means that I am Krishna's servant. I'm an eternal loving servant of the Lord. So when we take rest and we're dreaming at night, the material desires are appearing before us. in our mind at night in the shape of dreams. So if our identity, if we're really identifying as a servant of Krishna, then when we're dreaming and some material desire is brought up to us, we'll recognize our identity as a devotee in the dream. I said, wait a minute, I'm a devotee, I don't do this. I can remember years and years ago having a dream or something, because we were previously married, so maybe you dream about your wife, and then you're with your wife or something in a dream, and then you say, well, hey, forget that, you know, I'm a brahmachari. Your wife looks at you, what? And you wake up and go, wow, what a far out dream. Yeah, you dream of your wife, and then you said, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. Well, you know, we follow these four principles. And she, really? And then you wake up. So your identity is, you're actually identifying so much with this new life, with this spiritual identity, spiritual ego, that even so bad habits or desires from previous contact in the material world come up, because your consciousness is deeply situated in this new identity, then that will manifest even in the dream level. What to speak in a more waking. That's what's being said here, that these old bad habits, they play within the mind, but they won't get a chance to disturb the consciousness. Disturb the consciousness means if you had that desire in the mind while you're sleeping, then you might go forward and do some bad thing. But you realize that you're a devotee and don't do that. Or another thing, you're dreaming with your friends. And you're with your friends and they pass you some drugs or something. You say, no, I don't do that, I'm Hare Krishna. You look at you, what? And you see that in your dream and you wake up and say, that's amazing. I'm thinking so much that I'm a devotee. Even when I'm dreaming, I'm relating with that identity. So this is a result of associating with the spiritual masters, that one gets this knowledge and change of consciousness. Question: what should the disciple pay special attention to if he wants to make advancement on the spiritual path? And what is Sri Gurudev's duty in this? Let's see. If the disciple wants to advance on the spiritual path, the disciple should always take care of his cleanliness and purity. Cleanliness is next to godliness. We often stress this fact of keeping our purity. It's very important. Along with external purity, as in bathing and cleanliness, he should pay special attention to his inner purity. He should always take care that his conduct with body, mind, and words will always stay pure. And Sri Gurudev will always see to it that the disciple maintains his inner purity. Sri Guru's endeavors to always maintain such an awareness in the disciple and to always keep him alert in this combined, like this is combined, in other words, from the Guru's side, this is combined with the disciple's sincere allegiance. They cause the disciple to make quick progress. So from one side, the Gurudev is reminding and adjusting and correcting the behavior of the disciple so that they maintain purity in their interactions with others and their speaking and their movements and everything they do. Like the Brahmacharinis and the Brahmacharis are in the kitchen and they're cooking for the deities, and Gurudev walks in and they're all laughing and joking and, you know, hey, throw me the salt. Yeah, the salt. Hey, where were you in the kirtan the other night? Yeah, I saw you dancing. Yeah, whatever kind of thing goes on. They're just kind of talking really loose. Then the Gurudev comes in and says, "Hey, what's going on? Oh, Jai Gurudev. We're just cooking the offering for the deities, you know, for Thakurji." But he'll say, "Hey, this is nonsense. This is Maya." Be very strict. Men and women should be very strict in associating. It's just a minimal association if we want to maintain purity. If you don't want to maintain purity, then let it go. Let anything go. But the whole idea is to get out of the material world, and the major impediment to getting out of the material world is attraction between man and woman. So one has to be very pure to go to the world of purity. Param brahma param dhamam pavitram paramam bhavam. Pavitram. That world is totally pure, so to enter there we must be pure. Especially inside, we must be totally pure. So Gurudev will try to bring that, create that purity in the disciples from his own experience and from his own knowledge, how to maintain purity. Sri Guru's advice and the elevated knowledge he gives as a merciful benediction are the world's priceless treasure. Anyone who attains it is blessed, and his life is a success. How does one attain success in life? There are two things mentioned here that are considered to be the world's priceless treasure. And if someone gets these things, he will attain success. He's very fortunate. So Guru's advice, which is very personal and individual, exactly tailored to your, just like your clothes or your shoes are exactly to your size. So the personal advice of Guru, means you, in other words, you write him a letter and he answers it to you, or he actually takes you aside and says something to you. Personal advice. And the second thing, which is kind of a generic concept, which all gurus give, which is beneficial for everyone, and which will give everyone success, and that is transcendental knowledge. Right? So these two things. Every guru gives transcendental knowledge. I'm not the body and the spiritual world, and creation, yoga and meditation, karma, time, all those things are taught, the three modes of nature. So these two things, if someone is so fortunate to have these, both, not just transcendental knowledge, you can get books and get some transcendental knowledge, but if one is so fortunate to receive transcendental knowledge plus three gurus' advice, in other words, if you have guru, you're fortunate because you'll get an advice, personal advice from the guru, and you'll receive transcendental knowledge. And these are the great benediction or blessings for humanity. They're very, very rarely achieved and rarely attained. If you're so fortunate to have Sri Guru, his personal advice, and receive transcendental knowledge from him, then you can attain all success in life. Guru always endeavors to maintain such an awareness in the disciple. In other words, hey, you're acting impurely. Be careful. Why are you going over here? Why are you sitting there? Why are you doing that? He maintains this awareness because in the material world is impure. The modes of nature is of different impurities. Just like rainwater is pure, but when it comes down and mixes, with milk, then it becomes mixed a little bit impure. It's mixed up with milk, and then it mixes with mud, or it mixes with stool, and totally. So the modes of nature, ignorance, passion, goodness. But pure goodness is spiritual energy. When spiritual energy mixes with this material world, it comes some contaminations there. Our soul is in this body and it's contaminated. Why is the knowledge given by the guru considered such a valuable treasure? The Lord is the only target of the living entity. He is the ultimate goal and the only shelter of the living beings. If we accept the Lord as the highest attainment, highest goal of life, then knowledge about him and discourses on devotion to God are certainly a valuable wealth. Sri Gurudev is giving us knowledge about this, the Godhead principle. Therefore, it is certainly acceptable to say that Gurudev is giving us a very valuable treasure. There is no valuable treasure at all in this world that could serve as a repayment to what the guru is giving the disciple. That's why you have the phrase, always remain indebted. A debtor to the spiritual master. We can never repay him for what he's given us. What is the greatest of all knowledge? Krishne Bhagavata Jnana Samvitera Sara. To know that Sri Krishna is God is the essence of knowledge for the living entity. Sri Gurudev is giving us this knowledge about the Krishna principle and has given us devotional service to Krishna also. And he is advising us how to do bhajan, sadhana bhajan. Now perhaps you can understand why the knowledge given by the guru is considered so valuable. In other words, the goal of life is Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, and how to attain that, or what is God, how to reach him, what do we have to do to gain him or reach that place. Guru is giving all that, the means and wherewithal, how to do it, what is God, how to attain him. Many people think that spiritual truths are just imagined. Therefore, all discussions about this are just false chit-chat. How can we thus find the right conclusion? Please explain us this in an understandable way. Spiritual truths are the only subject matters for our thoughts. Very subtle things that transcend this world and that can only be known through tangible transcendental experiences. Spiritual truths cannot be perceived through our knowledge-acquiring senses, nor through our active senses, like all the worldly sense objects we ordinarily contact. Actually, the short-sighted ordinary person considers transcendental principles to be imaginary and false, and attaches no importance to them. But in fact, these things are all for real, and their reality has been accepted by the greatly realized perfect mystics. As long as the sadhaka does not progress on the spiritual path and experience elevated and sweet feelings, and as long as he does not relish a soothing sweetness like a cool and pacifying stream of nectar, he will consider the spiritual kingdom to be imaginary and unfounded. Even all those sadhaka bhaktas who have already often relished so many elevated sweet transcendental feelings by the grace of Sri Guru may sometimes get so absorbed in external mundane consciousness that they will also think, "Oh, this is all nothing. It was just a temporary imagination, but not actual reality." That's the end of this thing. It is not impossible even for the sadhaka to sometimes think like that when his patience, perseverance, and steadiness diminish or disappear. But I say, you may say that all other items of the spiritual kingdom are nothing and attach no importance to it. And there's no harm in that. You may call the spiritual world false and imaginary, no problem. But your Sri Gurudev, who pleases your eyes by sitting right in front of you, sitting at whose feet you can soothe your heart by hearing so many pleasing topics of devotion and transcendental knowledge, he is not imaginary. You can touch him. Maybe you can't touch God, and you can't see the spiritual world, and that's all. It's interesting. You cannot just reject him out of hand as, quote, false. If you call Gurudev's existence false, then you yourself are also an imagination. Is this kind of thinking not completely contradictory and impossible? Just as you are presently firmly convinced of your own existence, you are similarly convinced of the true existence of your worshipable Sri Gurudev. Therefore, if you truly perceive the first and foremost foundation of the spiritual kingdom, which is Sri Gurudev, as a real object, then by keeping firm faith in Sri Gurudev, you will gradually progress on this path, and in due course of time, all the other true realities will gradually be experienced and realized. It is not proper to just reject the elevated, sweet, and pleasant transcendental feelings of the spiritual world as false and imaginary, simply because you cannot experience them yourself. Well, I didn't experience it, it doesn't exist. Really, you've experienced everything in this world? You've experienced skydiving? Oh, I saw it on TV. Oh, that means it's real? You ever did it? No, but, you know, I must be there. It must be real. I saw it on TV. I saw somebody skydiving. You know, they jump out of a plane. There's millions and millions and millions of things in this world that we've never experienced. Taste? Have you ever tasted a flinkle fluku? Yeah. You say, what's a flinkle fluku? Well, you know, in China, that's some kind of rare delicacy. But you've never heard of it or saw it, right? So that means it doesn't exist, right? Because you didn't taste it, and you didn't experience it. Right? So what kind of logic is that? This is really very weak. You read in the Shastras about the wonderful exchange of rasa and these elevated, sweet, and pleasant transcendental feelings, Govinda Lila Amrita Bhavana Amrita, such sweet dealings between Krishna and the gopis. Ah, that's all imaginary, it's fairy tales, it's mythology. What is your qualification to pass judgment? You can't even see your own eyelids. You can't even see your own eyelids, but you want to see the spiritual world. It's not very intelligent to reject something, the spiritual world is false and imaginary, simply because you cannot experience it for yourself. All these transcendental feelings are very tangible and true things, and they're confirmed by the great realized souls. Therefore, not to have faith in these things, or to reduce the sadhana, diminish the sadhana prescribed by Sri Gurudev, is not very appropriate. In other words, you read earlier that someone, even after some time, he's practicing sadhana, but he loses faith in these things and he stops practicing. Remember that the first foundation of the spiritual path, namely Sri Gurudev, who shows you the path, is a tangible truth. And all elevated, subtle, and enchanting secrets of the kingdom of transcendental ecstasy are established on this foundation. At present, we are all conditioned souls, identifying ourselves with a gross material body. Now all the subtle and confidential principles of the spiritual world often elude us. But when we think a little deeper about it, we can well understand that all things that can be grossly enjoyed are just temporary. The stream of transcendental feelings that enter the gross manifestation are eternal and real things. The gross manifestation, means the material world, is unreal and subject to mutation and therefore temporary. But the transcendental stream of feelings that is characterized by the Guru's beauty, attributes, strides, makeup, words, and enchanting, sweetly smiling form remains eternally before the viewer without change. No matter how much the gross material body changes according to the law of nature, all these feelings my Gurudev was smiling like this. These are feelings that a disciple has. My Gurudev was smiling like this. My Gurudev spoke these sweet words with his smiling face. He looked at me in such a soothing, soul-touching manner. So no matter how much he's saying, that no matter how much the gross our body may change due to the laws of nature, but these type of feelings that we have towards Gurudev, they will never go, but they will remain awake with the same intensity on the canvas of our memory forever. Canvas, you know, like painting. Like our memory is like a painting. So if we have these experiences with Gurudev, very sweet and relishable experiences, they'll remain with us. They'll never diminish, even though the body will become old or whatever. Therefore, if somebody thinks that the spiritual truth is a specific stream of transcendental feelings, and it should at least once reveal itself in some form to impress us, then is that proper? And if it is, then how is it expressed? After all, we cannot remember anything of what we have grossly heard or seen in our previous births. We cannot conceive of these things at all at present. Therefore, how can we say for sure that we will remember the gross forms we perceive now in our present births and every future birth? So you see, it does not seem to be proper to want to perceive the highest attainment of the spiritual world in a gross manifestation. For isn't a gross manifestation of what we cannot exactly perceive in our next lives, after our present lives end, unnecessary? Thus, until now it is said that the samskara, or the habits to form, inclination to form, and attributes of something very beautiful, enchanting, previously seen, awakens our greed for perceiving something which is ever fresh, never beautiful. In other words, samskara means previous association with something or previous contact. So if in previous lives we had contact with many beautiful things, or fresh things, then in this life we'll be attracted to beautiful things and fresh things. In this discussion we may apparently arrive at the conclusion that the stream of inner feelings towards anything beautiful and enchanting is a real and eternal thing. So we say Krishna is all attractive. So we're attracted to beauty and love. Because we have samskaras, it means habits, or we have association in previous lives or in this life, with some kind of reflection of beauty and love. People are attracted to beauty, people like beauty and love. So Krishna is the most beautiful and the most loving. And we have some experience or some predilection or some inclination or attraction for something ever new and fresh. So that, what he's leaning to is that this cause of these kind of feelings is actually coming from the soul. This is in the spiritual world. It's basically what he's saying. And that's the real... He said, at any time this bhava can become bhava, or a gross manifestation. The first foundation of the kingdom of spirit is to have unflinching faith and devotion to your presently tangible Sri Gurudev. Then by the grace of the Lord, you will, in due course of time, understand and perceive all these subtle and enchanting principles. This is an undisputed truth. So the idea is you start with something tangible, and then you can realize the intangible. So the tangible manifestation of God and the spiritual world, which is full of so many, you know, transcendental ecstasies and feelings and elevated, sweet, pleasant, transcendental feelings, the material world, are perverted, reflected here in the temporary feelings, not transcendental, in the temporary feelings, which are not so sweet, or bittersweet, or sweet and sour, and pleasant and unpleasant feelings of this world. So the source of feelings, the source of feelings in this bhava sagar is the bhava bhakti. So Gurudev, he reveals this bhav. He actually reveals this bhav in the platform of bhav. Bhav and bhav. He shows to the disciple, he reveals to the disciple the actual nature of transcendental experiences, transcendental feelings and emotions. By his dealings, he's actually dealing in a transcendental way. He's showing to the disciple transcendental love. He's showing transcendental emotions. And it's tangible. The disciple can perceive and see that interaction with Gurudev. So on the basis of that, by having faith in the tangible representative of God, by having faith in Gurudev, then gradually he'll be able to see and experience all these sweet transcendental feelings himself, or herself. And by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. I told you before that you must know Sri Gurudev to be the manifestation of God himself. When the Lord is merciful to the conditioned soul, he appears before him in the form of the Guru. In other words, when a conditioned soul becomes disgusted, and he thinks that the material world stinks, becomes disgusted with all the apparently... In other words, when a conditioned soul, that's us, right? We were conditioned souls, and the degree to which we become disgusted is the degree to which we get proper Guru. When a conditioned soul becomes disgusted, you know, disgusted, fed up, fried, disgusted with all the apparently enchanting objects of the mundane world, whose enjoyment, material enjoyment, ultimately turns it into poison, and when he gives up all worldly pleasures and becomes eager to relish an eternal, pure, transcendental bliss, the Lord appears in the form of Sri Guru and reveals in the heart of such a seeker of truth the answers to questions such as, who is God? What is our relationship with him? Why are our hearts so eager to attain him? How merciful and loving is he? We do not attain the mercy of the Lord from scratch. Nor do we have such high qualifications that he will kindly reveal himself personally to our eyes. In other words, we don't have the adhikar for Krishna to come down. Here I am. Actually, the merciful Lord uses his manifestation, Sri Gurudev, to shower us with the nectar of his endless compassion and his endless love. Then it seems as if our hearts, that are scorched by the fire of material life, have given Sri Gurudev a place to give a most ecstatic, enchanting, and soothing treatment. It is as if he reveals a very pleasant, cool oasis to us. And in other words, you'll die if you don't find that, but somehow if you find that in the middle of the desert, so our hearts are being scorched by the fire of material desires, and hankering, and lamenting, and accepting, and rejecting, and frustrations and anxieties and so much burning in this material world. So the Gurudev gives a pleasant, enchanting, soothing treatment. and he removes all our affliction in the harsh desert of the material world. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, you should know Sri Gurudev to be another form or swarup of Sri Krishna, manifesting himself to the conditioned souls in two ways, the Antaryami or Supersoul and the Bhakta Shrestha. Gurudev is another swarup of Krishna. Krishna manifests himself. So how does God manifest himself to the conditioned souls? You should know Sri Gurudev to be another form of Sri Krishna manifesting himself to the conditioned soul in two ways. So Sri Krishna, God, manifests or presents himself to the conditioned soul in two ways. One way is super soul. Another way is Sri Guru. You should know that we cannot experience the Lord's grace just out of the blue. He manifests himself to us through Sri Gurudev or some special devotee of the Lord so that we can experience him. Guru Kripa and Bhakta Kripa are all just other names for the mercy of the Lord. How is the relationship between guru and disciple? Is there any sweeter relationship than this or not? Deko, look, in the whole world, you cannot imagine any sweeter relationship than that between guru and disciple. In this relationship, Sri Gurudev, who desires the best for his disciple, places reliance in his fully obedient disciple. And the disciple, considering his Sri Gurudev to be just like the Lord, devotedly offers his mind and heart to him. Is there any sweeter relationship than this in the whole world? Even the pleasures of heaven are insignificant compared to it. This is the most valuable thing in this blazing material world. The Lord has placed something named faith in every living being's heart. Living entity wanders around, busy finding a fitting person to offer his faith to. Oh, that's interesting. Wander around, looking for a proper person to offer your faith to. If he once can offer this flower-like offering of faith to the lotus feet of his dearmost pleasantly disposed Sri Gurudev, then can he ever take this faith away again from Gurudev's feet? The faith in Sri Guru is a greatly secret treasure in the heart of an obedient disciple. It's a nice phrase. But there's questions about how is the relationship between guru and disciple? Is there any? By once pouring this faith over the lotus feet of Sri Gurudev, the disciple's scorching heart is cooled off. And if he withdraws that faith from Gurudev's feet, then his heart will break. Can that ever happen? In this world, there is such a thing as peace. There is no other peace than that can soothe the disciple's heart as the lotus feet of Sri Guru. That is his holy place of pilgrimage and his all in all. No place, not even a holy place of pilgrimage, can draw the disciple from his Gurudev's feet. The foot soles of Sri Guru are the greatest holy place for the disciple. That is his Tirtha Raj, the king of places, all places of pilgrimage. There's that story about Bhaktisiddhanta we told before. He was in Braj. So the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was touring Vrindavan with all his disciples, and then an announcement was made in the morning. So today's program is that we're going nearby for about a 10-kilometer walk to visit a place called Sheshashayi, where Lord Krishna showed his form to the gopis of Shirdaksha Vishnu or Mahavishnu, and he lay down in the ocean of milk, and all the gopis went there. And then the other program is that Gurudev will be giving a lecture. So then, these are the programs. So then so many disciples, they ran off. They ran off to see Sheshashayi, this pilgrimage place, Leelasthan, place of Krishna's pastimes. But so many stayed back, and one of the ones that stayed back was Srila Prabhupada. He stayed back to hear from his Gurudev. So that's what's being said here, that wherever the Guru is, that's the place of pilgrimage, the king of all places of pilgrimage. When Lord Chaitanya was leaving as an ideal sannyasi, he was leaving Puri, coming to Vrindavan. And his disciples kind of tricked him because they wanted him to, didn't want him to go. And so they brought him to Shantipur by saying that one river that he came to the Ganges River and they said, this is the Yamuna. And he said, oh, the Yamuna, I'm in Vrindavan. The Yamuna's in Vrindavan. And then he found out, oh, you tricked me. How is it you... Of course, it was a loving exchange. It wasn't any real cheating thing, but... He said, so then at that time, Vaitacharya said, your mind is Vrindavan. Even though it's Shantipur, wherever you are, Lord Chaitanya, your mind is Vrindavan. Because you're always relishing this Radha Bhav. You're always relishing this mood of Gopi Bhav. So the spiritual master, he's in our line, Gaudiya line, they're in this mood of Vrindavan. So wherever they are, that's Vrindavan. And that's a holy place of pilgrimage. When Srila Prabhupada was in New York, he said, you think I'm sitting in a New York apartment, but actually I'm in Vrindavan. And I have my permanent residence there in Sevakunj, in Radha Damodar. So I'm not in New York, I'm in Vrindavan. So if you're with Prabhupada in New York, you feel like you're in Vrindavan. Very blissful, very happy and joyful, and all the ecstasy of living in Vrindavan.